before we bring up our 10th speaker, I'd like to be able to say that she's the only person that's ever successfully invaded the San Luis Obispo in a 500-mile high-speed chase, but that wouldn't be true. But it is true that Gregory asked her to come on up and be the 10-minute speaker. So please, let's give Eileen a round of applause.
My name's Eileen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Eileen.
Let's see. I always like to start off with my sobriety date. It's October 6, 2008, so I have 6 years sober. And my home group is the Five Cities group. It's up on the Mesa in Arroyo Grande. I would also like to say that I hope that my higher power can speak through me in these 10 minutes and that I don't get in my own way, because I can get on tangents that are the root of my self-centeredness. My favorite subject is me. And so for you guys to give me a little bit of attention up here, I can get off on a tangent. So I hope that all our higher powers can work together to keep me from, you know, out of my own way. I started drinking when I was 14 years old, and I was definitely the description of the alcoholic. I wanted to quit entirely and found I couldn't do that. And also, after I started to drink, I had little control over the amount I would take. What comes after the first drink for me is the second drink. And it was never, I thought alcohol abuse was leaving the alcohol sitting there and not picking it up and drinking it. I really, literally, that's what I believed alcohol abuse was. And I was proud to call myself an alcoholic. By the time I was 17 years old, I was a full-blown alcoholic. My experience is I use that as my identity, and that was the only life that I knew. I'm not a has-been. I'm a never-was. I'm somebody that was a failure to launch. I just went underground, and I didn't set goals at all for my life. My goal was, you know, I don't even live that way anymore, but my goal was you know, whatever I could have to store up, because as long as, even if I had something right in front of me, I had to get something more for when that something in front of me was gone. That's how deep my disease was, always trying to be one step ahead of itself, which is what I do in my recovery, is I know that my disease talks in my own voice, and so I have to outsmart myself by working this program rigorously, just like I worked rigorously out there to keep my disease alive. I have to work rigorously in here to put the penicillin for my disease, because I can be living with untreated alcoholism, and I can act really strange in sobriety with untreated alcoholism. So by the time I was 19 years old, I went to a sober living house because I was living on the streets, and I had nowhere to live. So that's what I did. And I wanted what you guys had, but I didn't want to do what you guys did to get it. And so I started using in that sober living house, and they caught me, and then I was back on the street. And it was like that. I was somebody that came in and out from the age of 19 to 27. And so I was familiar with what you guys did, but I didn't want anyone telling me what to do. We alcoholics are undisciplined. And so I definitely, I would always hit my bottom, and then I'd come dragging in here. And then I would get insulted in one way or another, and then I would leave again. Because my ego is what controls my disease. It's a soul sickness. And then I would, you know, enact that physical allergy once I take that first drink, and I would be on that cycle again. And I'm really happy that I have choices today. As long as I don't pick up, I have these choices today. When I pick up, that physical allergy takes hold, and I become a prisoner inside myself, in a prison that I make in myself. So I get really emotional today when I think back of how it was, because I had to have that gift of desperation. If you're brand new and you're hurting all over, you're right in the perfect spot, because that was exactly what gave me the gift of desperation to open my mind just a little bit more and a little bit more to do what it takes to get sobriety and keep sobriety, because I could get sobriety over and over. I just couldn't keep it. And so what's different from now and all those other times I came in and out was I did a four-step. All those other times, I only did one, two, and three. I did a four-step, and I did the rest of the steps as well. And I sponsor people, and I take them through the steps because we learn it by teaching it. And then I also have had a service commitment since the very beginning of my 6 years. I've always had a service commitment, and I rotate out and get a new one. And so I never did a service commitment before. I wanted to just kind of stay on the outskirts, and then once I copped a resentment, I would leave. But now I know that I have to keep my recovery fresh by, you know, working through those resentments and knowing that if I don't like what's going on, I can either bring something to the meeting or I can go to another meeting. There's always a solution to things today, which is really awesome because I used to feel trapped. And then I would get this kind of fight or flight thinking, and I would make these split-second impulsive decisions that weren't to my highest good. And it really is by grace, because I was somebody that I thought I was hopeless. I thought I was absolutely hopeless. And I wore it like such an identity that I didn't even know what it would look like for me to keep sobriety. And so every day today is a new day. It's brand new. It's where can I start where I am today? And today I was in a lot of pain and I didn't pick up. And that's the hope that I can give the newcomer, is that you can have different, you know, seemingly bad things in your life, which can actually, you know, turn out for my best good, because I get what I need, not what I want. And a lot of the times that I'm in pain, it's because I have to forgive myself and I have to forgive other people for not being what I want them to be. And so I say something a lot, and it goes like this. It goes, I forgive you for not being who I wanted you to be. I forgive you, and I set myself free. And I tell that to myself, too, because I have to forgive myself for my past and know that all the skeletons, those are used as my greatest asset towards helping and inspiring others, because I can understand. They can understand me, and I can understand them, whereas before, these were all things I was ashamed of and thought that there was no way out. It's interesting that one of the ideas for calling the Big Book was The Way Out, but I guess there were other books called that, so they didn't call it that. I love learning about the history. I had to get desperate enough to where I quit hitting bottom, and my bottom hit me back. That was how many times I thought I had hit bottom. Finally, my bottom hit me back, and I was like, I'm so done. I felt absolutely exhausted. And today, I work with others. That's how I combat my self-centeredness, because it's the root of my disease, and it gets me out of me, my favorite subject, you know, and like that. Such a sophisticated, attractive person is not somebody that's completely obsessed with themselves. And I can do that on the steps, too, where I can get really into, like, self-obsession, and I can just make a four-step that's like an autobiography. And so, really, like, I have to also know that, like, it's helpful for me to simplify. We do a better, more thorough job when we keep it simple. And I learned a lot of stuff from going to the Back to the 40s meetings up on the Mesa, and I listened to those Joe and Charlie tapes. Those are some things that have really helped me in my recovery. And, of course, sticking with the literature, there's a reason why it hasn't changed in 75 years. The doctor's opinion in the first 103 pages is what I use over and over again. I just keep going back to the anchorage. I call it the anchorage because if I have a question, I can go and find where does it talk about sex and relationships in the page 69, ironically. Like, I can find, like, where does it, you know, talk about the value of service work. I love it on page 100 when it talks about both you and the man will walk together and learn together and live in God's grace together. Like, and I had a big resentment against God when I first got here, but you guys told me, just be willing. See, all you got to do is have a little bit of willingness to think that there's something that brings the tides in and out of that ocean, and that person is not me. They said, go like this to the tide and see if you can stop it yourself. And I, you know, kind of did that because I needed to keep humbling myself, because I live in this fantasy world I've created up here, and it's an illusion. And I need to learn to know that my thoughts are not what reality is. And what reality is my creator, my higher power, working to create these events just as they should be, not as I would have them, which always ends up working out to the best. I love it at the end of Freedom from Bondage, that story in the back of the Big Book where it talks about, I don't get what I want, I get what I need. And when I find that I get what I've needed, it's what I wanted all along. And it keeps turning out like that over and over. So I know that today, what I'm going through, this too shall pass, and it will be there to bear witness to others that I would help. And I really am grateful and thankful that you guys have been here for my recovery. I wouldn't be alive if it weren't for the program in the room. Thank you.
Fantastic. So let's have Chris come on up.